Great. Thanks very much. Good morning. First things first, we do have one disclosure. Dr. Collins is a co-investigator, and he's co-developer of the Impact software program that we'll be talking about today. My colleagues include a trauma surgeon, Dr. Nance, who can't be here today. I'm presenting on his behalf. An emergency medicine physician, a clinical psychologist, trauma research nurse, research assistant, and myself. And we have acknowledgments. We'd like to acknowledge the National Science Foundation Center for Injury Prevention Studies at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia for sponsoring this study, and its industry advisory board members for their support, valuable input, and advice. The views presented here are those of the authors and not any of these other groups. Our interest is in concussion, and more specifically, concussion among kids and the management of concussion in the hospital setting, and in the emergency department setting in particular. Here are some figures about the background. Trauma in general, injury, is a leading cause of childhood mortality. Head injury is a leading cause of mortality and a frequent source of morbidity in pediatric patients. To put some numbers to this, over 500,000 emergency department visits occur every year for head injury, 95,000 hospital admissions, and over 7,000 deaths. On one hand, fortunately, most head injury is classified as mild traumatic brain injury, but that can still carry very serious consequences for the patient and for their family. Based on the sheer volume alone, the NIH and also Congress has designated mild traumatic brain injury a serious public health problem. Much of what we know about the natural history and management of mild traumatic brain injury, or concussion, is derived from research that's related to sports concussions. And from that body of work, we know a couple of things. Younger kids are slower to recover. Premature return to activity can be very damaging and can prolong recovery, and especially put kids at risk for a second impact syndrome, which is another blow that the head has sustained when it's still in a vulnerable state. It leads to a cascade of neurological events that can be very traumatic, and a result can be death. So figuring out how to best manage kids with concussion is a major challenge, and it's also a major priority. One approach to managing concussion is this, the impact test. It's a neurocognitive test, stands for the immediate post-concussion assessment and cognitive testing tool. And it's a program that's been very widely used, well validated for different age groups and genders, and used extensively in the sports injury population. Sports injuries, however, account for only a fraction of the head injuries that occur in children each year, including mild traumatic brain injury. Motor vehicle crashes and falls are the most common mechanisms of traumatic brain injury in kids. Impact has been, although it's been used very extensively among athletes, it's also shown to work well among kids and has been validated down to age 11 for the type of impact program that I'll be presenting on today. The emergency department is a key point of entry for patients with concussion, and we're interested in improving our ability to identify kids with concussion when they come into hospital emergency departments, better diagnose them, and better understand their prognoses over the days and weeks that follow. So the project goals were to assess the feasibility of emergency department-based neurocognitive testing in kids with concussion. We want to establish if neurocognitive deficits exist, in addition to symptoms, that is, neurocognitive deficits, in this cohort of kids with mild traumatic brain injury who present to the emergency department and are discharged from the emergency department. These aren't inpatients. We've worked with inpatients before, but we're very interested in identifying kids who come into the ED and are discharged from the ED and better managing that population of kids. Secondary interests are to understand if different injury biomechanisms result in different patterns of neurocognitive deficits. Today, I'm really just presenting about the feasibility of administering this program to kids and evaluating kids with the impact program. How we proceeded, this was an emergency department-based prospective cohort study where we evaluated the incidence and magnitude of neurocognitive deficits in kids who were evaluated and discharged from the emergency department with concussion. So a prospective cohort study. Our population of interest was pediatric patients between the ages of 11 and 18 years, diagnosed with concussion that defined as Glasgow Coma Score of 14 or 15 who were treated and released from the emergency department. What we did was we administered the immediate post-concussion assessment and cognitive impact testing tool, the IMPACT tool, as a way to evaluate neurocognitive deficits and also symptoms. We evaluated kids in the emergency department at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. There is another version of IMPACT that you can administer to kids between ages of 5 and 10. It takes even longer than the IMPACT program that we assessed. Here we're only talking about 11 to 18-year-old kids. When you administer IMPACT, the way it works is it's a computer-based inventory where you sit next to the patient and get them started, and they go through and fill out self-report, first of all, on 22 symptoms, and you can see those symptoms listed here. Kids rate their status on these symptoms on Likert items from 0 to 6. You end up with a total symptom score. This patient scored 39, and it could range from 0 to 160. In this instance, we had a baseline exam on a patient, and we also had follow-up exam on this patient. Here, I'll be presenting only on baseline data that we get from administering IMPACT to kids in the hospital emergency department. So it evaluates them on 22 symptoms, and it also evaluates them neurocognitively. And the way that it does that is the child watches a series of processes of games, and they get evaluated in this way. For example, a number of words will be shown, and then later in the program, shortly after, and then also much later, words will come up again, and they'll say, was this one of the words that you saw? So word discrimination. It's used to evaluate attentional processes and verbal recognition memory. Another of the exams involved design memory. It shows a large number of series of designs and then later asks, was this one of the designs that you saw? This evaluates attentional processes and visual recognition memory. There's an X's and O's games. You see a pattern of X's and O's with a number of them highlighted. Then there's a distraction task where as quickly as you can, you're supposed to watch the screen and depending on what pops up, hit the right key in response. Then you come back and you see these all colored black and you have to identify the ones that were yellow in the first place. So that evaluates working memory and processing speed. Another example is you see something like this and you're asked to identify the number that corresponds to the shape that you see at the bottom. Another example is color matching. You see a word like this, green, and if it's presented in blue, you have to indicate that it's not showing green. So being able to see colors is required to complete this examination. And then another test. You see three letters, then it switches you over and says, here are a series of numbers. As quickly as you can, click backwards and count down from 25, go as far as you can. It comes back and it shows you three letters and you have to indicate whether or not those were the letters that you saw. So that's a way to evaluate working memory and visual motor response speed. All in all, this program takes about 30 minutes in itself to complete. So you can imagine when trying to evaluate kids in the clinical setting, this is not yet used as standard of care. We're using this only for research purposes and trying to work it in around the clinical management of the patient. So it takes some time investment, and it's a challenge to find time in the emergency department to administer this. Not that many pediatric patients don't have time. They often have a lot of time while they're waiting. But working around the clinical staff and, of course, accomplishing a research study that involves this is the challenge. So we're evaluating the feasibility of getting that done. Over the course of about a year, this was a pilot study, and we enrolled 29 patients. As I said, they were between the ages of 11 and 18. The mean age was 14 years. 55% were boys. 17% had a prior concussion. 28% lost consciousness. 56% had amnesia for the event. And half of their injuries were the result of sports. Motor vehicle crash and falls were the other common mechanisms. How many did we not enroll? Well, over the course of the year, we were able to identify from patient charts that we missed 19 patients who we simply weren't in the hospital to recruit. The way recruitment worked was that Staff working in the ED would page the trauma research nurse when a seemingly eligible patient was there, and she would respond to the ED to take care of this herself. So she couldn't always get there at a time a patient was in and before they were discharged. We had 34 outright refusals, and then 23 who we were unable to enroll. And that would be for a number of reasons. Most often it was because a child-aged patient, 17 or under, didn't have a parent or a legal guardian with them. In a few instances, the child didn't speak English, which was a requirement for us. Sometimes a patient had a fracture on an upper extremity, and that ruled them out as far as eligibility goes because we wanted them to use the keyboard without any difficulty. We did include kids with a lower extremity injury, but nothing above the knee. Our reason for that is that femur fractures are most often admitted. So non-penetrating injuries below the knee, we did include them. So depending on how you look at it, we could say that we enrolled somewhere between 25% and 33% of kids who were eligible to be recruited. Of course, that has implications for generalizability of these findings, but also we're interested in that in terms of feasibility. How well can we actually manage to enroll kids and complete this study with them? Here are results of the impact test. Scores were evaluated on a score, as I said, from 0 to 160. A score above 8 is considered abnormal, and 63% had abnormal symptom scores, dizziness, vomiting, and so on. 93% of the patients were below the 25th percentile on one of the neurocognitive deficit scores. There were four domains that are evaluated, neurocognitive domains, and at least one child was below the 25th percentile on one of those. That's classified as moderate deficit. 21%, so fully 93% had moderate deficits. Fully 21% were below the 25th percentile on all four of their domain scores, so severe deficits. And there was at least one, there were 79% of patients who had at least one of their deficits below the 10th percentile. The most common symptoms were headache, 93%, and dizzy, 76%. And those two symptoms also had the highest severity ratings associated with them. Impact has been administered throughout the United States to many, many kids, thousands of kids, and with normal kids. These are kids who haven't sustained a concussion. And based on those results, there are normative data that have been put together by year of age and by gender. When you call the 50th percentile normal for the United States, we compared our patients to that normal, which you see here. Here are the four neurocognitive types of processes that were evaluated, and the patients that we evaluated were statistically lower than 50 on all of them: verbal memory, visual motor, and reaction time. Symptoms, I had said that 8 and below was a normal score. We see that the average symptom score here was 21, so these kids had higher symptoms than average. To be expected. A useful portion of pursuing this research was that we identified the challenges that would exist to possibly moving impact into using it for actual clinical management as opposed for research purposes. One major challenge was that for research, we had to wait until the final disposition status before we recruited kids. That was just the arrangement that we had with the clinical staff. So patients had already been in the ED for quite an amount of time before we introduced ourselves to them, described the purpose of the study, and asked if they were willing to participate. So naturally, a lot of patients were ready to go by the time we made contact with them. In this pilot study, we had a limited participation from recruitment staff. And at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, there are academic associates. We call them the gray coats, as opposed to the clinical staff who wear white coats. Academic associates are there solely for research purposes, and they work from 7 a.m. till midnight every day. Sole responsibility is to identify patients who are eligible for studies and recruit them and possibly conduct research with them. We only had limited participation from the gray coats as a result of funding. So we expect that better integrating with that research team that's embedded there could definitely help. And of course, there are uncontrolled circumstances that prevented us from recruiting more kids for research. What we came away with knowing was that it seems like emergency department-based recruitment and testing and follow-up with kids is feasible using the IMPACT neurocognitive test. It's not easy, though. We identified logistical challenges. This remains an area where we need in need of great clarity, figuring out how best to administer neurocognitive exams to kids in the emergency department setting. IMPACT did indeed identify significant neurological deficits among kids who were classified as concussed based simply on GCS score and having a couple of symptoms consistent with concussion. So in administering this test, we obtained a lot more objective information about neurocognitive status of kids than we otherwise would have had. This version of IMPACT, as I said, isn't suitable for kids under 11 years old, but that makes up a large proportion of patients being treated for concussion. This exam, as I said, takes about 30 minutes. The other one takes even longer, so even more challenges to recruiting even younger kids. We did conclude that, having conducted this study, it helps establish the potential to use IMPACT in the clinical setting as part of clinical management routinely. And so working up to doing that is something that we're very interested in doing. Thank you.